Source sheet here because I have.
And, well, I didn't see one. It just stopped on November 20th.
He's got one from Shlo Lignov Nefesh Misrael.
That was last week's.
Yes, but I'm doing this again because we didn't finish that.
Oh, okay.
That's what I sent out.
Rabbi, how are you?
Hello. A lot of regards to you, Aaron.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How have all the travels been?
Yeah, we were very nice. Yes, we have saw a lot of Coopers and a lot of Katzes and a lot of...
a lot of Coopers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Howard is friendly with Coopers.
Oh, yeah.
One of the... Actually lives in Israel, but she's the best friend of one of my friends, so I became friends. Then the Coopers, like, work en masse. They're not individualized.
They're good people. Very good people.
No, it's a Southern family thing.
Rabbi, I'm sure your remark. I heard very good things about your remarks and very good things about your visit. So.
Oh, well, good. Thank you.
I had a cousin that was there. That was at one. That was, I guess, at Shal Shittus, and said very nice things about it. It
seems to me that everyone there is your cousin.
Probably true. No point about that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's the South. It's all that inbreeding.
Yeah. Exactly. Sure. Are you back in New York?
Yes. Yeah, I'm here now.
Okay. Yes. How's that? Ellie's doing well. Everybody's good?
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. We spent some time with our son Ellie in Florida, and that was great. We just took a detour on the way back from Memphis to Florida, so that was nice.
Beautiful. Okay.
Okay, so a few points. I think we started with an agadah last time that when the Torah says lo tignov in the Aseres Hadibros and mitzvah lamed vav in the Sefer HaChinuch says shelo lignov nefesh mi Yisrael, right? The fact, though, is that lo tignov is still lo tignov. Right? Now, there are other psukim in the Torah that prohibit stealing in general, lo tignovu in Parshas Kedoshim. And there are psukim in the Torah that prohibit kidnapping in Mishpatim and in Kisetze. The reason why the Gemara insists that this pasuk is talking about kidnapping is a concept called Davar Halameid Mi'inyano. The pasuk before it and the pasuk after it are Mises Beis Din, so okay, lo tignov is also Mises Beis Din. But still, pshat is pshat, which is reflected in two sources I'll share with you now. One is a mechilta that says that the right ear of an ivri is pierced if he wants to stay on with his master. And the Gemara says, Ozen sheshama mehar Sinai lo tignov vigonav tirtza. The ear that heard, do not steal, and yet he stole, should be pierced. Now, then it should have been pierced when he first was convicted. Right. No, that's his punishment. The 6 years he has to serve is his punishment. We'll see more about that soon.
But that's only if he can't pay the kefo.
If he can't it's only if he can't pay back the keren of what he stole. Right? So then v'nimkar b'gnevaso. So
it should be every, if you're going to take that view, it should be every time, regardless of whether he's an avid or not. Because if he can pay, he's not going to serve.
Right. Anyone who stole, you know, you can argue should have his ear pierced, right?
Right.
That should be the punishment. But all right. But the Medrash means to say, no, we're going to let you get rid of the punishment by... by paying or by serving. But then you want to serve more? Oh, now that's too much. That's your own volition. And then now we're going to pierce your ear. Look, there could be other reasons for piercing the ear, of course, but that's just one source that seems to indicate that this lo tignov at Har Sinai means don't steal. Don't steal a person, don't steal an item, don't steal what you might be sold for.
So is the drasha? It's like a double drasha. It means both, you know, like oftentimes you see the Gemara says, we can't darshan this pasuk. We need it for itself. We need it for its basic shot. So how do we know basic lo tiknov, aside from the fact that it's davar olamei b'inyano, that it's misas based in to,
so on that, on that, I would tell you that the second point I wanted to make is Yerushalmi and Maseches Shkolim. I think you did Shkolim with the Daf Yomi. So Yerushalmi and Maseches Shkolim says that each one of the Aseres Adibros was taught with subsidiary similar mitzvahs. Does that ring a bell? In the sixth parak, it says
maybe
each one of the Aseres Adibros, like Soto, was taught along with Lotinov.
Okay.
So Lotignov included all types of Gneva. Okay.
I see.
And Gzela. So that, I think that's what really how to explain that, Michal. That's okay. That's all. Now, there are two stages in kidnapping later in the Torah, and the Chinuch spends a lot of time on this. Because the Avera of depriving someone of their liberty is certainly an offense, no doubt a violation of the Torah. But when the Torah pronounces it's really, as far as the rest of the ancient world, I think this might have come out the last time, there are two important works on this topic. One is called, one is a book by Shalom Paul. Does that name ring a bell? He was a professor of Bible at JTS for many years.
He also taught at Hebrew University.
Oh, okay. So he wrote a book on called Cuneiform Law, which is a comparison of of Parshas Mishpatim with a whole host of ancient Near Eastern laws, mostly Sumeria, Babylonia, Egypt. And he makes this statement, but it's not as authoritative as Yechezkel Kaufman's similar statement in Toldot Emunat Yisrael, which is an analysis of far more ancient Near Eastern materials, is that Israel is the most draconian, has the most draconian law against kidnapping. No other society has the death penalty for kidnapping. Okay, I'm just putting that out there. So, but here's the thing. The death penalty doesn't kick in unless the kidnapper did one of two things. One is to then sell the kidnapped person, right?
Yeah.
Sell him.
This is what they said about Yosef. This is what
we talked about that.
Right. Yeah. And not only deprived him of his liberty, but they sold him. And two is to put him to work, meaning do to him what the person who's likely to buy him from you is going to do.
Right.
So,
in other words, if you kidnap someone and you put them to work, that also triggers the death penalty?
Correct. Put him to work. Isamerbo.
I didn't know that.
Or that you sell him to someone else, ostensibly for some kind of, that kind of work also.
What is the language of the pasuk? Mechoro, what's the other one?
V'hisamerbo.
V'hisamerbo, right. Okay, that's the putting him to work part?
Right, that you usually when someone is deprived of their liberty and put to work, they're mistreated. It's not like you're not like an indentured servant or something.
Right.
So that's what triggers the death penalty. And then the Chinuch spends quite a bit of time in comparison with these two elements to the two elements in Bava Kamma. This is also in Bava Kamma, of course, but in Bava Kamma but there's a lot more on this. It's called Dalet Vehei, you know, the four and the five for the sheep and the ox. Is that that's also in two stages. You steal the thing, you kidnap the person, and then there's a second level that kicks in a deeper punishment. Right? Stop stealing is twice, and then you sell this animal or you shecht this animal, right? The shecht, the shechita, is comparable to the imur, the putting to work, that kidnapped person to labor. And the selling is selling. So each one has two stages. Okay.
So, by the way, is the four or the five that I guess the double two, it's inclusive of the principle. So it's the principle and then three turns of the principle, or four turns of the principle, or is it the principle and then another four or five turns?
So it's the KFL means two altogether. So it's the
right. So one and then another turn of the principle.
Right. Got it. Or it's being fourfold for the sheep or fivefold for the
right.
David expresses knowledge of this when he says that, you know, the rich man who stole the poor man's sheep should pay arba tayim, but then he says, chay Hashem ki ben mavis ha'isha who says those, is that the person should die also. Right?
Right.
Okay, what if he just, if he shares the sheep, would that also trigger it?
No. No, because
so it's not even like
the shvita. It's a good question.
So even like working the cow or the ox isn't considered.
No.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's a custom. It's either shechting or selling or milking the cow. It's not, you have to pay for what you took from it, of course. If you shear the sheep, you have to pay the shearings, but
right.
Milk the cow, you pay for the milk. But you don't, it doesn't trigger in that to that extra punishment. Okay, now, the Chinuch tends to do this kind of thing. So if you look at the number four, because the Torah says that you take the person into your rishus. That's how you deny him of his liberty. Right? So the question he asks is what is in order to be chayav misa? So you see number four, it says, Eino chayav misa. Okay, this is the Vav Yevkrenu means or he sells him. Binehach nosa l'rishuso, haynu kechol gneva. Right, Marbinim Bav Metzia Daf Yilamid Beis Gago Chatzero Karfifo. Of course, you remember in that daf that the Gemara there talks about comparing it to a get, right? You have to give the get to the woman. It says, put it in her hand. A hand means her rishus. Her chotzer can also acquire her get, right? Her basket can also acquire her get, right? The plane of her rooftop can acquire her get. As long as it's in a safe place, then yes, it's called a Kinyan Chotzer. Right? So Bab Metzia Daf Yud is a big, big sugya on comparisons of different types of Rishuyos.
So when the brothers put Yosef in the boor, this law wouldn't have applied because it was Bishut Rabim?
Yeah, I would say that, yeah. Look, there's a question in the Meforshim, whether it was the brothers who picked him out of the boar or not. It looks, the Rashbam says it was the Midyanim. And when Yosef said, don't be upset that you sold me, it means don't be upset that you were responsible for my being sold. Of course, the Roman emperor in the Yom Kippur doesn't see it that way,
But the Roman emperor in the Yom Kippur story, he makes a point of saying, what's the punishment for kidnapping someone and selling him?
Right, and that's why you I need 10 to atone for that.
Right.
Why Mechiras Yosef still needs atonement might be because at the end of the story, it seems that they still thought that Yosef had it out for them, Luis to Manu Yosef. You know, is that Yosef's fault? Is that their fault? Why did they still think that? Is that, maybe they thought that Yosef excused them but never forgave them. So, we don't have to atone for every single sin, right? I don't know if we have to atone for Yaakov deceiving his father. There are lots of things that people did very bad in ancient times.
There's this whole line of like Chazals or whatever that they didn't even, they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. In fact, they thought they were doing something right.
But it was ratified based on Shalmala. That they should
so that's that line of, of, yeah. of you know so So somehow, you know, that theory or that opinion has been adjudged by Jewish history to not be right. Because
as the Rabbi Ishmael ascends to, you know, and he says he heard Rabbi Pragod that they should in fact offer themselves up to be killed.
So what's interesting is this full disclosure is that there is a medrash called Bereshis Rabosi, and it's not your regular run of the mill medrash. It's only on Bereshis. And it seems to be, there's quite a bit of scholarship on it. It seems to be very late medrash, even from the, like from perhaps from Rav Moshe Adarshan. But in that medrash, it says that the Malachi HaShoreis told God, God, we don't believe that the story of Mechiras Yosef was properly atoned. And therefore, we think it's that a Jewish history will be served by giving 10 martyrs to the Romans to replace Yosef's brothers. Now, it's historically speaking, it's hard to fathom that that's all happening at one time because the 10 rabbis lived quite a bit of time apart from one all together. Right? Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel did live at the same time, but some of the others, like Hanina ben Tradion, is quite a bit later. Right, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is.
Isn't there like some source that says like Hashem himself joined the brothers at their Beis Din and condemned Yosef, or that he was involved in it?
Yes, there's a medrash like that too that says that the Beis Hamikdash can't be built in any of the land of anyone responsible for Mechiras Yosef, and that's only Binyamin, because Yosef is also responsible for Mechiras Yosef, and he needed to atone also. His atonement comes also at the end of Bereshis by apparently not telling his father what happened.
Right. But there's some rabbinic, you know, or maybe it's Zohar or something that Hashem himself was in on.
It sounds, this does sound like a Zohar, but I'm trying to find a more mainstream place for it.
Even if it's the quote ratified thing to do. Hashem comes down. I mean, they seem to be bearing a lot of guilt in this coming week's parsha, and next a few weeks parshas also.
Rashi has not the pshat in each individual parish, but the overall picture that Rashi creates, which is known as Rikuz Ha'alila in a book on Medrash by Yitzhak Heinemann. He says that the theme, the over Rikuz Alila, means he creates a whole theme where the brothers are going to Egypt not only to find food, but to fix what they did to Yosef.
I think that's another measure that Yosef would not allow himself to be alone with Yaakov.
Right.
Because he was afraid that
Yaakov didn't know what his sons looked like. Yeah, because it was too much of a temptation to break down and tell his father what happened that day. And he knew that would so... It would just ruin Yaakov's...
Oh, it would destroy him.
Yes, just all the good feelings that he has now of, you know, putting things together and trying to make sense of it all and to think that this is what my boys did that day and they hid it from me all those years. So that would just be too much for him to bear. So Yosef held on to it. Look, Yaakov, you know, pretty much destroys Shimon and Levi for what they did in Shechem. Just, you know, Yosef... If what they were afraid of was that it would be Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, and we'll disappear just like everybody else in between, you know, like Ishmael and Esav and all of Avraham's other children. So, you know, Yosef might have been able to arrange such an eventuality by embellishing on what they did to me that day. And, you know, Yaakov would have believed anything Yosef would say.
He wouldn't have to even embellished. I mean, he would have known that, but Yaakov would have known that they handed him this transpassim, which they deceived him into thinking it was, it was Yosef's blood.
Right, that Yaakov should ever know, at least in this Olam HaSheker, that Yaakov should ever know that they actually did that would be so hard to bear. Okay, so I'm elaborating on this because, which coincidentally, in the mitzvah Lamed Vav, very much connected to these parshios, and it's always good to do such a connection. Okay, so number five discusses the order. If somebody If I just walk over to someone else's ox on their property and I shecht that ox, I have to pay for the ox. I only have to pay fivefold if I steal it first.
Right.
You get it? So,
if you shecht it first and then you steal it, you don't pay the five first. That's the point.
Right. I mean, it's a technicality maybe, but it says here, you see, he writes, Alalava ze eno chayev misa raki mishtamesh ki bo la'achar hagneva. Kodem ha-mechira, shnemar v'samer bo, as Loshim said before. V'afilu mishtamesh bo b'pachos mishava pruta chayav. That's an interesting concept. Why would I think that it has to be a shava pruta? The Torah just says, v'samer bo, kol shehu. There's no shear.
It's hard to imagine how you could ever have a Isamia that's not shava pruta.
The Gemara does give an example of that, of sitting in the shade of a pregnant woman's bump.
Oh, okay.
that's a hana from someone that's possibly pachas mitzvah. So you kidnap a pregnant woman and you sit in the shade of her bump. But you see, but you know that there's a similar halacha, because, you know, when it comes to, let's say, eating something on kosher, it's not a shear of a shava pruta. The shear is a kezias, right? Because there, it's not a question of the value of what you eat. It's the size of what you eat, the amount of what you eat.
It's iser, it's not mamon, right?
As opposed to the din of me'ila.
Right.
In order to be chayav for me'ila, one has to use a shava pruta of this cup I'm drinking from, or this, you know, this cup of hektish that I'm drinking from, or this korban that I'm eating, or something of that sort.
So using the kaltel for the as shade wouldn't be a mila.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So the Gemara tells him Seches Psachim about the Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. He used to give shear and purposely use the shade of the walls of the Beis Mikdash.
Huh.
So the Gemara says, isn't the over on Me'ila? And the Gemara says, no, because the walls of the Beis Mikdash are meant for the people on the inside of the walls, not for Hana, for the outside of the walls. So it's not Kederach Hana. So, and amazingly, Rav Zilberstein used that Svara to an explanation of a fascinating question. I mean, I'm sorry to take 2 minutes from it, but I won't spend more than 2 minutes. Was a woman who visited her mother in a town in Israel, let's say in Ramot, and then she went home to Modi'in, which is about 25 minutes away, and forgot that her child's pacifier was left in her mother's house. And the child will not go to sleep without that particular pacifier. So what are you supposed to do? So the mother said, I have an idea. The husband apparently was given shear, or he was in court, whatever, he wasn't available to pick it up. So the mother said, I'll put the pacifier in a small envelope, and I'm going to take very heavy tape, and I'm going to tape it to the back of the next bus that goes from Ramot to Modi'in, which is every 10 minutes, right? And you can track the buses there. And she said, okay, it's leaving Ramot now. I just put it on. Which it'll be by you in 20 minutes. Go out. It passes a block from your house, and you'll see the back of the bus. And it worked. It actually worked. And then she bragged to her husband of how clever they were in getting the pacifier back home before the kid had to go to sleep. What did the husband say?
He stole.
Yeah, we have to pay a fare.
Pay for a ticket.
Pay a fare.
Whatever the fare is, seven shekel, seven, whatever it is. Right, we have to have the card clipped. You know,
there was no passenger.
Right, so he used the same argument. He said that a bus's fare is for people inside the bus.
Right.
Aha.
That's good. Since there was no wear and tear, There's no shava pruta. What is
not taking up any space on the bus? You're not taking a seat. You're not taking standing.
Right. There's no depreciation.
Right. And you're not adding, that amount of weight, you're not adding any weight there because there's no weight.
Anytime you go on a bus, there's some depreciation.
No, you have to assume that the Nahag would have agreed to it if you ever said something to him.
It's not his to agree to, though.
Yeah.
It's owned by the shareholders. I mean,
it's a cooperative. Or used to be.
I thought I'm about to try this, but if one gets on a subway and just rides between the cars, can one make the same?
Not allowed to.
I know. As I said, I'm not about to do this.
No, because, I mean, you can't get into, you have to pay to get into that area. But anyway, but I'm just saying is that
remember, I don't think they do it anymore, but remember when kids would take their skateboards and hook onto the back of a bus and get a ride that way?
Sure. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, you just ride on the outside.
Right.
It may be usher because it's not a safe thing to do. So it might be for a violation of a different mitzvah. But did you steal from the municipality? It's a question.
Well, there actually, it's possible. And it would require the bus to go marginally.
Yeah, because the bus driver now has to be careful about how he might see the kids through the window. And what are you supposed to do? Stop the bus, get out, chase them away, and then go back into the car. They'll run back and stand right there again. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's not, I remember, you know, seeing kids doing that when I was on my way home from school from, you know, years ago on the city buses. Anyway, so that's what we discussed is number five. The question of whether, is there a difference between selling this person, Mechira Zu, number six, Ein Chiluk Beinim Macharo Li Yisrael O Lenachri? Okay. Right, doesn't matter. This is whether a Gentile can be on it. You shecht it for a Gentile, or whatever it is. It's the same. It's the same did. In fact, the Vilna Gaon understands lo tignov to mean don't steal from anybody. Right,
but is he saying that if you sell the person to the Jewish person,
it's the same.
And he's going to end up being Machal Shabbos and.
Yeah, I mean, that's so he's chayav misa already for selling him. Yeah, this guy, the Gentile is probably going to make him work on Shabbos.
We better observe anything. I don't know.
It's interesting because even if you say that mechira to a goy under certain circumstances might not actually be a true mechira, so comes the chinuch to say it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You got money for him, and it doesn't matter. This might lead into a sugya in the beginning of Meseches Tmura, where the Gemara discusses a big machlokas Rabbaya and Rava, if you recall, about whether when you violate something in the Torah, whether it's mahani or not. Remember that lashon?
Right.
Mahani. Does it create a fact on the ground? So the Gemara gives all kinds of disputes, and in the end it says Rav and Abai agree on every one of them except one, is that when you lend money on interest, lo mahani, right? The money has to go back, and even the principal has to go back. But otherwise, some cases are yes, some cases are no. If a Kohen marries a divorcee, mahani, that marriage is binding. She needs to get out of that marriage, even though it violates the Torah. But if a man marries his sister, he gives his sister kesef kedushin, she gets to keep the kedushin, but they're not married, she wouldn't need a get. All right. Anyway, that's what he talks about in number six. Number seven is what happens if I sell him? So I kidnap someone, he's in my dungeon, and then I sell him to someone else. I get $1,000, and before the guy, he says, let me finish my lunch and I'll go and pick up your kidnapped person. And before he gets a chance to pick up his new purchase, the guy escapes. Chayav Misa or not? What do you think?
Mm. But the payment was made?
Payment was made. A kinyan was made. Machro, this is the case. Number seven. Machro va'adayin hu birshuso, he says pater.
What?
How are you kona and eved?
So there it has to be, remember it says that eved is huksha kekarka.
Right.
But we're not talking about an eved knani here, we're talking about an eved ivri.
It's actually really not an eved.
Right, eved knani is huksha kekarka. Hine Rashi Piresh, Kivin de Hu Bershuso, Shol Nignav, Dagan of Loich Nisa Bershuso, Kimoba Mishnah, Vachin Hu Berambam, Kan Halacha Gimel. Right? So,
isn't this concern on whether the Bani is Kone or not?
So you, this is where he continues. Ramban is Mesupak Bazeh. Shadayin Hibishuso Shalganavim, Kain, the Shita Zu, Lomahani, Kinyan Kesef. Ushtar achimach niso l'rishuso, because we're talking about the kinyan of Ben Yisrael, so therefore it is a it has to actually be an actual kinyan where it passes over into the rishus of the other person. Okay, now what happens?
Nobody says that. I mean, the way the chinuch approaches all of these things is from this very legalistic point of view of, like, you know, did the sale actually happen? Was the title rishus transferred? No one says if you try to do it, even if legally you fail to do it, you still are chayav. Because
it's misa. That's
a, yes, I know. But the point is that the one way to understand all of this is based upon the ganav's behavior, not based upon whether he affected legally a particular outcome.
Yeah, this is why, you know, you say that, you know, the worst abaryan is a Talmud Chacham who knows how to get away with, who knows Bava Kama Daf Samach about all the ways to kill someone through a grumma, you know, and you know,
but like that's the chinuch, that's the Minchas chinuch's lens of all,
you know, absolutely. This is his CV. This is what he wrote his book about. Is to take these, you know, these questionable Rambams, and he's always, you know, everything is misupak. Maybe it was this. What he does, his job isn't to take, you know, halacha psuka in the Rambam. His job is to make up new situations that no one thought of before. It's like when someone asked the Rashba, why don't we say full hallel on the last days of Pesach, and the Rashba answers with guile. It's not my habit to take questions from people who ask that are found in the Gemara. It's not my job to you know, you're supposed to be Shas, then ask your questions.
Right.
So, and make sure that your question.
He's not interested in the Musar components of any of this. He's interested in the Halacha. You know.
Yeah. No. What he's trying to do is determine. He's like an artisan, a silversmith. He's fine tuning the parameters. The halacha. That's why these hypotheticals, which are not a little crazy, but it's just like being, you know, adding detail and determining precisely the parameters.
Right. So he would you see, he does not go on the kind of the limbs that the Shagas Aryeh goes on. Right. And the Shagas Aryeh, you know, goes through sugyas and you know, no one does it as well as he did. And what's interesting is the Shagas Aryeh is very rarely, his conclusions are very rarely brought down in Psak. Of course, the great poskim were beforehand, but the, like the Mishnah Berurah or Chayei Adam or things like Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and stuff like that. You know, but the big shots, the Taz, the Magen Avraham, these guys are all before them, Minchas Chinuch and others. But the Minchas Chinuch rarely concludes a paragraph by saying, this chiddush is I'm paskining halacha. No, that's not the purpose of this book.
Right.
Okay.
Right. He's interested in the gymnastics of it, or
not gymnastics. It is
finding the exact
fine definitions of the legal terms.
Right.
I like the silversmith parable. That's beautiful. Right. It's right. Like this. Right. It's art.
Yes, that's after it is. It's elaborating it to a degree that we wouldn't otherwise appreciate. We wouldn't understand.
We would need the Rav Soloveitchik to give us a beautiful.
He actually, I stole that from him. He used it.
It's like, you know, someone just skating and figure eights backwards, and he's like having such a good time on playing basketball with the Ravid and the Ran and the Riff and the Russian. So okay. Anyway, it's an art form for him. Okay, number eight is this shows up very often in Shas, especially in Bava Kama, which we're in, of course, now, which is that if the thing involves hekdesh, so there's usually like a gzeiras hakosuv, right? V'hu'ad bivalov, bivalov v'lo behektish, right? V'hamesi elo, lo v'lo behektish.
Right.
Right, all over Parshas Mishpatim, Gzeiras HaKosev, Meseches Bava Kama, that excludes hektish from the equation. So comes the chinuch to say here, what happens if somebody steals a person? I mean, this is pretty crazy. Vorba Bava Kama Sham. So the ganav v'hektish chayav arba v'chamisha. Not a person. You can't maktish a person to the base of mikdash.
Is this erech or something? He did his erech or something?
Yeah. But you can maktish a cow to the base of mikdash.
Right.
So what happens if you steal a cow and then you maktish it to the base of mikdash, you give it to the gizbar. The gizbar shechts it and uses its money for the bedek abayis. In order to do that, it has to be a balmum. Or a trefa possibly. Just the only thing you can't make hektish is mechir kelev and esnan zona. But everything else is has value. Everything else has to be evaluated. You pay a chomesh, and then the gizbar keeps it. So what happens if after he shechted this cow and this balmum cow, which can't be, you're not allowed to makdish a tumim to the bedek abayis. That's an aveira in itself. A tamim has to be makdish to the kedushas aguf, not to the bedek abayis. So if someone was makdish this cow that he stole,
we're now saying he owns it.
So
makdish it.
He acquired it. You're right. If he makdish it, he had to acquire it. And
but there's a whole sugya, like when you steal it and you control it, is that exercising ownership?
Yeah, you know the makdish davar sheino shelo, right? You know the sugya in the beginning of
right, but if it's
levah gazul and in of course all over bavakama.
Right, but controlling it is ownership for purposes of transfer.
Wait, but if you're going to say that, then why is it? Then why can't he just shecht it himself? If he's acquired it, why is he shecht?
Well, because he didn't want to. He wants to do tshuva, and he feels that I can gain expiation from being makdish this, not. But anyway, but he says,
Chayab Arba Chamisha. That's the question. That's the
Mali Macho Leshamayim Ola Hedyot. In Cain, so now he's saying, Kan Behiktish Oso Lebedek Habayis, Lechori Yechayav, after Ein Hektish Chal. Of course, the Hektish is not Chal on human being. He's making a huge Chiddush here. Cain Nirla Nivas Daiti, he says.
Right? But could you repeat that again?
He says that he's trying to go from the din of Dalad Vehei,
right,
of Shechita, that says that if someone actually acquires, you have to acquire it because Eino Demakdish Davar Sheino Shelo.
Right.
But if he does acquire it, and he's Makdish it, the Gemara says in Daf Ayin Tes that he has to pay Dalad Vehei. So then the chinuch suggests, if so, why don't we give a comparable case here? If someone was makdish, this person that he stole, and was makdish it, is makdish him to the bedek habayis? How does that work?
His value to the bedek habayis.
Well, he says that hektish isn't chal. You know, you can't sell the person, you sell his erech. And you have to find out how old he is. Is gender?
Right.
You pay the
In other words, that has nothing to do with giving the person. That's just there's like a reference table for values. So
amazing.
You know that's not.
Okay.
Right. But let's stay with the ox, the simple one. Is there a special out from the halacha for hektish? Is there one of those xeris concepts you referred to for this?
So the Gemara says that in order to give you makdish, it has to be birshuscha, meaning that it's biyodcha, mamish, and it has to be halachically yours. So we do know that a ganav can acquire if the owner lost yeush. He's still responsible to pay 1, 2, or 4, or 5.
Right.
But that's just, you know.
But if he sells it to Hegdish or gives it to Hegdish or whatever, that's not a carve out from the 4 and 5.
No, it's just the same din.
Same din. Okay.
Like he stole it. He sold it. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Right. Right.
Okay. Now in Perek Meruba, so he says on Da'afayin Ches, it's the same sugya. Gabi Mechira Darba B'Chamisha Mevur De'im Number Nine. Now De'im Machro Chutz Me Echad Mi Meir Shabo Eino Chayev Barba B'Chamisha. Usham Pluktim Dafka Dabar Hanitar B'Shchita Havei Shir or Afilu Karnav Gizosav Havei Gam Ken Shir. In other words, when you shecht an animal, the whole animal has to be included in the you know, what's devalued. He has to sell the whole thing. But he wants to know, what if I pull off a piece of the corn or the piece of the hoof or something like that? So, but if he sold it, chutz miyado, chutz miraglo, then the din of 4 and 5 don't come in, right? And therefore he suggests also that what he's doing now is what I started doing about a half hour ago, was to compare these two stages right. to the two stages of Dalet Vav. If any of you were ever in my, I remember I was teaching Yerushalmi Bava Kama. We went through the whole thing for a few years on Monday night shiur. This slot actually was Yerushalmi Bava Kama. And Yerushalmi just an inordinate amount of time, much more than the Bavli, compares the two stages of Dalet Vav to the two stages of Gneva and Gneva's, kidnapping and the subsequent Avera that kicks in, the death penalty. And there are issues of Edim Zomimim in between. You know, what if it's Edim Zomimim on the original Gneva, but not on the 4 and 5? Right, 4 and 5 is only an avera if it was stolen first to begin with.
Right,
right. Okay, but those are all.
If you sold everything except for the horn, you wouldn't be chayav in 4 and 5.
He's not sure. He's not sure. But if you sold everything except for the leg, you wouldn't be 4 and 5. But he's not sure about the horn and the hoof. And then he talks to the next one about selling the cow, except it's uber. Surely the cow is the cow, but the uber is the uber like a thigh? Is the uber something separate from the cow? Right. Remember in Maseches Me'ila, where an animal that is part of a bestiality situation with a human. So if the next day the animal gives birth, the Gemara says that young also is possible for a korban because the young was also nirva, or the young also was nogeach, right? The pregnant cow that gores someone and kills the human. So the Gemara says that the uber also was a nogeach. Okay.
Why do we treat then a human uber differently?
To be machmir, I think. In other words, do we always say yerech uber yerech imo?
Well, when we're doing the business man Noah, we came to say that an abortion of the would be rakit. It'd be killing, a murder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Abortion, it appears to be
certainly usher to a Ben Noach, and it appears to be usher to us too.
Right, but it's the opposite of this view, which is that the uber is the fetus of the cow.
I'm thinking of a case like, let's say, maybe surrogate motherhood or egg donation or something like that. You know, the egg, the source of this egg is from woman A. It's implanted in woman B, and woman B takes it to term. So does the uber, I don't know if you can call the egg an uber, but as the fetus grows, it becomes like a limb of the mother. But, you know, that's probably the way the woman would want it. You know, it's probably my child, and it doesn't need a conversion. But these things are still... they're relatively new to the world, so we have to cover all the bases, depending on what some posek might say later on. You know, or what the so whenever I arrange for these things, I've done it quite a few times, we get a written psak, Rabbi Yosef, or someone, you know, with a lot of heft, that for 20 years from now, that, you know, if the status ever becomes an issue, so I say, oh no, here is a posek wrote a tshuva on my very case, and this is what we did, and this is, you know, whatever the advice is. Okay. However, I think that we're arranging now for the Amunah thing from 9 to 9:15 to be at a different part of the house. So maybe I can come on earlier from now on Monday nights.
Well, that would be great if you can.
Yeah. Okay.
There's so many questions that come up.
This time goes too quickly.
It does. And none of us getting any younger.
Well, it's so intentionally stimulating.
Exactly.
Okay, guys. Thank you. Welcome back.
Happy
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Everyone. Thank you. Chag Sameach, everybody.
Chag Urim Sameach.
Regards. Call to. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye,
Walter.
Good night.